You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy: money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, here's Maggie Dawn.
Welcome, Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. And as it is the 3 o'clock hour, we are talking about money. And I can think of no better guest than Pennsylvania Congresswoman Summer Lee to talk about what I think is one of the most groundbreaking pieces of legislation that I have ever seen in my 47 years on this planet. But first, let me tell you a little bit about Representative Lee. She was born and raised in the Mon Valley of Pennsylvania. She's been a community organizer. She's an attorney. She went to Penn State, go Nittany Lions, and Howard University School of Law, where she focused on civil rights and social justice advocacy. She's been a labor organizer working for the Fight to 15 to increase the minimum wage. And in 2018, she won a seat in the Pennsylvania State House of Representatives. But she's parlayed that into becoming the first Black woman from Western Pennsylvania ever elected to Congress. So first, Representative Lee, my congratulations for that accomplishment. And secondly, my congratulations on this incredible piece of legislation that you brought to the floor and introduced last week.
Oh, thank you. And listen, Maggie, when you say that you could think of no one better, I can. I just want to start by saying that I can definitely think of better folks to be here. But we're really lucky to have had good folks around us to help us to work on this. People who have been in this particular struggle, in this particular fight for income equality and so much more, way longer than me, but I'm grateful to be in the position now.
Well, you happen to be the one to bring this legislation forward. And when we think about social justice, right, in my head, that always equates to economic justice. We cannot have social justice without true economic choice. For some context here, people, before we get into these particular policy proposals in the American Sustainability Act, let's just check where we are today. Since the 1970s, productivity and worker compensation, wages, have basically gone in opposite directions. Workers are so much more productive than they have been. And yet wages have effectively stagnated or gone down on a real dollar basis. This means that the benefits of our economy, the benefits of your hard work, aren't coming into your family's pocketbook. They're going to the upper 1% of the richest and wealthiest Americans. It's even worse when we look at the 0.01%, the really, really wealthy. Again, more than 40% of working Americans make less than the median cost of living for a single adult with no children. More than 40%, that's incredible. And it's even more heartbreaking to think more than 70% of Americans make less than the median cost of living for one adult and one child. The economy is not working for the middle class. That feeling that you might be getting screwed, yep, you're not inventing that. That's a real feeling. That is legitimate. And what I find so incredibly powerful about this American Stability Act that you've put forward, Representative Lee, is that it addresses both tax policy and wage reforms. So I want to hand it to you to start telling people about these fundamental policy approaches that as soon as I started reading them, I went, of course we should be doing that.
Yeah, you nailed it. It's this idea that for so long, Americans have felt like they don't even have a chance, right? We don't have a chance to compete. When we think about the inequality gap, the wealth inequality gap, it's not anywhere close to shrinking. And this is something that has been persistent in and out of administrations, in and out of the volley between parties. It is an American staple. And so many people have grown almost just accustomed to it, right? Accustomed to this idea that there are some people who are just bound to be incredibly wealthy. And there are some people who are bound to be working from paycheck to paycheck. And the reason why it was so important that we approach it this way is, first of all, it's because of my lived experience. When I was on the Fight for 15, right, it was a brief time because it was quick before I realized that we were not going to organize our way out of this type of just income stagnation, out of this type of tax issues, one McDonald's, one Wendy's at a time. And that was literally what I was doing, right? I'm going from Wendy's to McDonald's to, you know, Burger King. And I'm trying to convince, you know, folks who are being screwed in their wages by multi-billion dollar corporations that they are worthy of 15. This is back in 2017, that they were worthy of 15. So what the American Stability Act is attempting to do, right, is a transformative package of legislation that doesn't just address the need for an urgent raising of the wage. It also has to increase the ways in which the amount we make, and then the level of, you know, our living expenses, our cost of living, also many programs that we need. How is it always falling behind no matter what happens, right? So that's the first piece, right? We want to make sure that we're raising the wage immediately, that we are, you know, not just tying it to the rate of inflation, right? But we are making sure that it is to the rate of a living wage, right? So that is the first thing it does. The second thing is that tax piece, that tax reform piece, making sure that we're shifting the burden from the folks who are working class, middle class in this country, to the people who you mentioned, right? Not just the 1%, the 0.01% of people who have seen and experienced so many benefits in this rigged system. And we have to start to unrig it.
I just want to make a couple points of emphasis about what you're talking about, Representative Lee. The first thing that I noted was we need to stop calling this a minimum wage, because some baked into that is this valuing or this idea that you should pay your workers the very least that you can get away with.
Yeah.
When corporations and business owners, you don't put those shekels in your pocket without your workers. They need to eat at that same table you do. If you're getting fat, your workers get fat along with you. That is the way the social contract in capitalism is designed to work. So the legislation, its very namesake, is that we're going to move away from this concept of a minimum wage to a stability wage, immediately raise that wage floor to $20 an hour, and then index that to either annual inflation or the increase in the average wage for all workers in a given region or in the United States, whichever is higher. Mm-hmm. This effectively would ensure that we all get fat if our business owners are getting fat. And I mean that, in a really positive way. The idea of a stability wage. Thank goodness. It is not a good thing to try to nickel and dime and get the very most by paying the very least to your workers. I've never understood that point.
It's incredibly counterintuitive and it's counterproductive. Yes. But the reality is that's not a secret. We recognize that it's so demoralizing for American workers, right, who do grind it out. You know, we often talk about a 40-hour work week, right? But we know people who are working well above a 40-hour work week. But what they see and what they find is that particularly those who live in areas where the cost of living is incredibly high, right, that they're still increasingly being priced out of housing, that they're increasingly being priced out of the areas that they called home, areas where they work, right, or where, you know, they go to school or university, right? And when we're thinking about that, the long-term effects of that, right, of people who cannot afford to live in the communities that they work in, people who can consistently show up for work and they watch their bosses get wealthier and wealthier while they can't afford basic living expenses like their food, you know, like transportation. That is a fundamental problem that we have in the American economy. And it's not one, like you said, that we're going to be able to nickel or dime our way out. Recognizing, we say often, right, that a high tide lifts all ships. But we refuse to apply it to workers.
And I wanted to make this point also clear. When we talk about the stability wage, it is the way that in my economist brain, I always thought we should do it, is we know how much it costs to live in a given region. You put that basket of goods that we need together to live. a roof over our heads, food on the table, medical care, transportation, again, all of those costs, and you back it out, assume a 50-hour work week, because even that, I think, is low for what some people are working. Yes. And you can actually derive an hourly wage that is a stability wage. Folks, I am joined by Representative Summer Lee of the 12th District of Pennsylvania. She is a congresswoman helping to reshape the American economy to get back to serving the American middle class and to make sure that the wealthiest pay their fair share. Now, I wanted to ask you a little bit more about a couple of these specific tax policy provisions, because the first one that blew my mind was the cost of living exemption. Explain it to folks.
Certainly. So when we think about who, and when we think about our tax brackets, right, that's kind of where that comes in. Everybody kind of knows the vague idea of a tax bracket. And the people who worry most about tax brackets are people who are making less, right, than a particular amount, right? It's not millionaires who worry about a tax bracket. In fact, once they get to a certain, you know, income, they're not worried about a tax bracket at all. So what we're thinking about is like a living wage at this point is largely calculated at being about $40,000 a year, right? We can argue that, but the indicators, calculators,
give or take.
That's give or take, but that's what they're saying. And they're taking into account, right, basic living expenses, things of that nature, right? What we're saying is that people who do not reach that threshold or up until that threshold should not shoulder a tax burden, right? So they should be exempt from those sorts of, so from that sort of taxing, right? But what we're also saying on the back end, right, and this is the part where we're shifting it, right, is that folks who make over $1 million, for instance, we would apply a 3% surtax. If you make over, I think, 15 million within our bill, you know, it would be an additional 5%. Because the reality is that folks who are making up to the living wage, are still being drowned out by a tax burden. Whereas people who make a certain amount at that point, they're not getting any higher amounts. And that's where we want to tackle that piece right there.
I cannot wait to dig into this more. We're going to explain all of those pieces of this new American Sustainability Act again, because they are revolutionary and yet so common sense. I'm joined by Representative Summer Lee here in this day's episode of Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Civic Media Radio Network and the Patriotic Millionaires. We're going to dig in more to this cost of living exemption, because I don't want anyone to miss the power and the simplicity of what that exemption means for middle-class Americans, especially if you feel like you're struggling paycheck to paycheck and cannot get ahead. We're going to be back with more after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Time for a deep dive into the one issue that matters most in a capitalist democracy, money. This is Maggie and the Millionaires Talking Money, a joint production of the Maggie Dawn Show and the Patriotic Millionaires. Now, here's Maggie Dawn.
Welcome back, everybody, and welcome if you're just joining us. Don't worry if you've missed the first segment today. You can always find those at civicmedia.us. Go to the Maggie Dawn Show page and check it out. All of our Maggie and the Millionaires episodes you can find there. Today is an especially important show, I think, not just because of the bravery of my guest in introducing what I think is absolutely groundbreaking and transformative legislation, but because of, frankly, how common sense the proposals are in the legislation. As I read through it last week and over the weekend again, the question that kept occurring to me was, why has it taken this long to return to these basic first principles, which is that our capitalistic economy doesn't work well without a wealthy, growing, vibrant middle class, right? And our democracy certainly does not work as well if people feel like they're being left behind. My guest this half hour is Representative Summer Lee of Pennsylvania's 12th Congressional District. She began in the fight for 15, but as you put it last segment, Representative, you quickly figured out that the problem was much bigger than that. And we've been talking about these particular elements of the American Stability Act, which you introduced last week, along with a number of co-sponsors. I wanted to dig into this cost of living exemption very carefully so that people can follow what we're saying. And so the first piece that the legislation proposed, as you were explaining, was not just a minimum wage, but a stability wage that will be calculated effectively based off what it costs a single person without any kids to live in a given region. So it's medical, housing, transportation, food, the basic stuff that every single human being to live with dignity requires. And then that stability wage, once we calculate what that is, we know what that looks like as an annual income, right? And you estimated, you shared with it that it varies, but it's somewhere in the ballpark of around $40,000. And then you said the piece that is going to blow people's minds with how commonsensical it is. If you make $40,000 or less, why are you paying any income tax on that? That is the fundamental point, is it not? Like, if you make 40K or less, no more income tax for you because you're making the very least that it costs a single person with no kids to live. Am I understanding what the Stability Act proposes?
Yes, that is precisely what it does. Because exactly what you're saying, we're seeing so many people who are paying far more than their fair share on incomes that truly are too low for us to be proud of in our economy. But the second part is that, right, when we think about who's not paying their fair share and what it could look like if they were paying their fair share, and not if they were, when they do pay their fair share, when we think about all of the other just public goods, public programs that are so important to us that aren't as invested in because we see oligarchs who are not paying their fair share. The surtax on the other end, the opposite end, right, where we don't have up to living wage, you won't pay your federal income, you don't pay federal income tax. But once you get up to the very high end, that we are actually expecting you to pay more in. And that's how we continue to pay for our roads, our bridges, our programs, critical programs like Medicare, you know, so many things that so many Americans don't just enjoy, but need. They are earned in benefits, are earned benefits. So that's why that is such an important piece of this legislation, right? There are many bills that float around, not just at the federal level, but at state levels too, right? That float around that says we need to raise the wage. That's where the fight for 15 comes from. But even this says that, listen, 15 might be the immediate, but we recognize that that's still not a living wage and it's still not a stable wage. So that's why these pieces are so important to this particular bill.
It brings together so many of these economic justice concepts, right? And again, we cannot achieve social justice. We cannot achieve the promise that America was founded on without economic justice and providing people with the basics. And I don't mean providing people, ensuring that people that are willing to work a 40 and 50 hour work week live in dignity in this country. I am sick of people saying we live in the wealthiest country in the world when we have not said to every single adult person who's willing to work an honest 40 to 50 hours a week, that we promise you that you will not have to live in any sort of circumstance that is less than what a human being deserves to preserve their human dignity. That is what this is achieving.
But Maggie, real quick.
Go ahead. Please. If
I could just, because I really do want to add this piece, because even especially as we talk about human dignity, I want to actually remark that this bill, even in the raising of the wage piece, it does two things. It raises everybody's wage to the stability wage. And I want to emphasize that this also includes sub-minimum wages, right? So those are workers with disabilities. Those are your tipped workers, your service workers, who have for so long lived without the dignity that we you know, we lift up, that we profess to in the American economy. And I say that because there are going to be some people who work with disabilities, right? Yes. Who work with disabilities, and their work week might look differently than other folks' work weeks, but there is no less dignity in the work that they're doing, no less dignity in the work that they want to do. And they also will benefit from this.
And again, the biggest picture here is if you're saying to yourself, well, if folks aren't paying those income taxes, where are they made up for? The American Stability Act addresses that in effectively a surtax for those that make over $1 million, a 3% surtax, and a 5% surtax on those making over $15 million. Y'all, those people will be living in dignity. We could slap a 10% surtax on them and they would be just fine.
Well, and we're still going to live in dignity.
That's always right. They will get
however you find that.
I cannot thank you enough for all of your work on this, as well as your entire career of service to working people and these economic and social justice ideals that we really should make sure become realities here in this, the wealthiest country in the world. Representative Summerlee of Pennsylvania's 12th Congressional District, my thanks to you.
Thank you so much for having me. Thank you so much for your work lifting all this up, right? And keeping us on the right track. We got to do more.
Let's keep going. I close every single one of my shows by saying I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together, Representative Lee certainly showing us the way forward. Keep it locked, folks. When we come back, Dom Salvia joins the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's Monday. It's 3:30. That means I'm going to be joined by my little buddy and friend, Dom Salvia, who's got an amazing show after mine every day from 4 to 6 p.m., the Dom Salvia Show. Welcome back, Dom. Nice to have you.
Hey, Maggie Dawn. Happy day, sister. Nice to see you.
Good to see you as well. Folks, if you were looking to hear from Tom Perez, the director of the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs in the White House and a senior advisor to President Biden, literally just heard from the woman who set up the interview. He has been pulled into a briefing with the president about the evolving situation as a result of Hurricane Helene along the eastern seaboard. So let's start there, Dom. I am just absolutely blown away. It looks biblical in proportions, yeah, to say the very least.
It is. It's really scary stuff. And when we saw this thing barreling down last week, the speed at which it got to a category 4 and how fast it hit the land, it just kept on going. The meteorologists, people were warning, hey, this is going to be a big one. This could be bad. But it's hard to imagine that the folks, you know, up in Asheville, North Carolina, were thinking that they were going to get to the degree of damage and mayhem that has hit that community and several others in that area. It's terrible.
It really is. I've traveled all around that area, yeah, in Asheville, North Carolina. I've been in some of the areas on the coast of South Carolina and North Carolina, really beautiful, mm-hmm, country. And I mean, hundreds of people have died. I mean, this is an absolute emergency. And let's listen to the insightful comments of the former MAGA president as it relates to what's going on. Aaron, if you can play, let's see, this is cut 6.
Alabama and all of the other states who have been really hit hard by that very large hurricane. That was that big one, a very large hurricane this week. We're with you all the way. And if we were there, we'd be helping you, and you'll be okay.
maybe what, tossing out paper towels to the crowd, or maybe throwing some fried chicken to the crowd?
That's what it conjured up, was image it, like, what, how would Trump handle a massive emergency, you know, where millions of Americans are in need of solid, fact-based, scientifically based leadership to help address a public health crisis? Oh, wait. We know what he would do, because he was the president during COVID, and he was telling people to use bleach and sunlight to cure themselves. He threw paper towels at the people in Puerto Rico when they suffered catastrophic losses. I mean, just from a common sense perspective. And if we're hooked up to the honesty machine here for a minute, do you really think Donald Trump is the one you want in the Oval Office if your home gets demolished by a tornado or a flood, or we see a second global pandemic? I mean, I don't get it, Dom. There's just, the man does not have credibility when it comes to this sort of leadership, because he doesn't have empathy for other people's pain.
And that certainly is difficult to overcome when he truly, truly has no empathy. And we've seen, as you mentioned, the other disasters that have befallen this country while Donald Trump was the president, and his absolute lack of leadership made those issues, made those scenarios worse. So it's not going to be any better. And when we took look at and think about and ponder the nightmare of a second Trump administration, well, it's not just Trump. It's also going to be the lackeys that come in. At least last time, there were probably some good, you know, deep state administrative types. You know what I mean? Like, they knew what was going on.
You mean this some time, subject matter experts that know something?
I mean, yeah. Jason Miller, who's going to be his Trump's point person on, you know, hurricane relief in the southern part of the country? Of course, in Donald Trump's mind, it's always him. He is the best expert on everything, which is a terrible thought. And then the lackeys that would come in, you have to question that as well. Thankfully, we have a president like Joe Biden who has empathy, who understands, you know, the point of governance. It's amazing how we see right now. I mean, MTG, a lot of folks are screaming for aid, of course, and we want to give them as a community, as a country. That's what we are for. This is for the people. Well, they'll be the first ones to try to, you know, cut funding for FEMA or those kinds of things when everything seems to be going okay, at least for them.
Yeah, that's, again, I guess there is a role for government, you know, when natural disasters strike and people need help. Frankly, MTG hanging out at the Bama game this weekend, probably not a good look. And Donald Trump there as well at the Bama game. What are you doing? Like, I'm sorry, SEC football and political pandering is more important than showing your face in a region that has been biblically destroyed, that has killed hundreds of Americans. Like, no. Saturday college football, much more important.
Yeah, everything's totally normal. I mean, a 1,000-year flood. You know, the description of biblical proportions. Well, you know, it's Saturday. Let's go watch some football.
It just doesn't. None of this sits well with me. And that's fundamentally the question I have for people. If it's your home that is now 10 feet underwater, everything that you've owned destroyed, who do you want in the White House? Do you want a person that expresses compassion meaningfully and sincerely, whatever you may think of her other policies? Or do you want someone who has consistently demonstrated an absolutely pathological inability to show compassion or concern for anybody other than himself? I just, like, this is the thing that to me puts this choice this November in such sharp relief. If I'm one of Donald Trump's advisors, I'm a little nervous about all this.
Well, hell, Donald Trump slapped the label on a generator and go down and, you know, try to make some money out of it. Isn't that what they do? I mean, it's always the grift. So even if there were to be some sort of, benefit for the folks, some disaster relief, you got to question the motives of the folks that would distribute it, given their propensity to grift. And is it thoughts and prayers now, or can we discuss, you know, the challenges of climate change? Is it too early? Is it too early? Because that thing, that hurricane sped up and fed like crazy and just blasted through this country. You know, 1,000-year flood, biblical proportions, but you know, there's no such thing as climate change.
Yeah, it's just
a hoax from China, if you believe the former president.
Or if you believe Ron Johnson, like maybe it's a thing, but who cares? Because it's people on the coastline in the south that are dying, and people in you know, like on the continent of Africa and South America that are going to die, and it's not Wisconsinites. So all to the better. We'll have to find that sound of Ron Johnson saying that last spring in a Senate committee hearing, because you know, Ron again, always having the insightful fact-based analysis of human suffering. That is the question to me. Like, we are facing circumstances where people are suffering, right?
Yeah.
What do you want in a leader when confronted with massive scales of human suffering? And I don't care if we're talking about economic policy or emergency relief or the war in Ukraine or now Israel starting what is a ground invasion of Lebanon and our world inching closer to all out warfare in the Mid East. Do you want a president that is concerned about human suffering? That to me is a fundamental question. And I have yet to see any indication. If he claims to care about certain people's suffering, right?
Yeah.
When he talks about immigration, okay, I'll grant you that he seems to be concerned with people's safety and security in this country. But so what? What does that mean other than mass deportations and saying, I don't care about the safety and human suffering of other people? When does that group of people that he doesn't care about their suffering include you, right? Like that is the question. When does he come for you? When are you no longer in the in crowd? Which I guess leads me to this point. I mean, over the last, I don't know, couple of weeks, there has just been a seemingly never-ending stream of overtly racist and sexist stuff coming out of the former president's mouth and his supporters like Mike Lindell selling pillows for $14.88, which is a known Ku Klux Klan and Nazi number, 1488. They tattoo it on their bodies. This constant spewing of all of this nonsense. Like, why does it feel like Donald Trump and the MAGA cult is deciding which Americans are worthy of human dignity, right? Like, which Americans, which people living here are in the in crowd and who is in the out crowd? Like, I didn't know that our country's domestic and foreign policy was going to be reduced to lunchroom, like, clicks. That's what it feels like, only with existential consequences. What do you think's going on? I don't get it.
I think it's very consistent for the mega philosophy. Until it happens to me, and even if it does happen to me, as long as it's happening to somebody else, it's really not an issue. And the way, even to this case, as the AP was reporting, that Trump today, without evidence, saying that the Biden administration and North Carolina's Democratic governor are going out of their way to not get help in Republican areas. I mean, there's still people that are missing and haven't been identified. I mean, this is still an active crisis, and the former president is already trying to lay some sort of blame that something isn't happening quick enough, and you know, it's the Democratic administration and the Democratic governor that are screwing the Republicans in North Carolina. I mean, that's where he goes to in a crisis. Blame something, even though there's no proof, even though he has no concept of what is actually being done, but hell, it comes out so easily, so he's just going to say it. It's the most consistent philosophy of the MAGAs.
Well, and I think J.B. Pritzker, when he was talking about Donald Trump calling Kamala Harris stupid, nailed exactly what's going on in the MAGA cult leader's mind. Let's listen to this sound, Aaron, if you don't mind. It's cut 8. And I'm sorry I sprung it on Aaron. Here's the setup here. what you just said, right? What Donald Trump is saying, that Joe Biden and the democratically elected and Democratic governor of North Carolina are withholding assistance from Republican counties. Why is Donald Trump saying that? Because it's untrue. It's false. It's a lie, obviously. He's saying that because that's exactly what he would do. It's projection. Let's take a listen.
Joe Biden became mentally impaired. Kamala was born that way.
Wow.
She was born that way. And if you think about it, only a mentally disabled person could have allowed this to happen to our country. Anybody would know this.
And then J.B. Pritzker, if you've got his response as well. And if you don't, Aaron, that's okay, because I can summarize it. J.B. Pritzker was getting interviewed, I believe it was on NBC, on one of their Sunday morning shows. And he goes, well, Donald Trump said that because he's projecting, like he's the one that has this obviously isn't quite playing with a full deck, many would say, including his niece, who is a licensed psychologist. I mean, that's what he does. Kamala Harris isn't smart. More of the same. People, do you really want domestic and foreign policy in the United States to be reduced to what happens in high school cafeterias when human suffering is at issue? I sure don't. We'll be back with more Doc Salvia on the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. You want to join our conversation? 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Back with more in just a moment.
Talking in my sleep at night, making myself crazy.
Out of my mind, out of my mind.
Wrote it down and read it out.
I don't know about you all, but the stuff Donald Trump says makes me lose my mind, out of my mind. But I'm glad I've got my good friend Dom Salvia here to keep my feet firmly planted on terra firma. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Let's take some calls, shall we, Dominic? We
got a couple of let's do it. Yeah,
good friends on the line. Gary from Sussex, you had some comments about a sustainability wage.
Yes, I am a private business owner, which I think you know. I'm an HVAC guy. Dom knows it. Dom saw me climbing up the ladder, and they're taking bets whether I was going to fall off or not. Remember
that? You won, man. Well done.
I didn't fall. Okay. So I work hard. I started out making $4 an hour as an HVAC guy. I worked my way up to a manager. Then I worked my way up to being a private owner. I pay my guys well. Okay. They get $40 an hour. They work hard. Now, I also have guys that make $10 an hour because they don't want to work and they don't show up for work. Anybody in this country, if you work hard and show up on time, volunteer to work on Saturdays or Sundays, you're going to get to be an assistant manager, then you'll be a regular manager, and who knows what's going to happen. You have to work hard in this country.
Gary, let me just ask you, first of all, why do you keep the guys on the payroll that you pay 10 bucks to? Do you think they might show up on Saturdays and on time if you paid them 40 bucks an hour? It's partially a rhetorical question. And Gary, have you ever talked with people who do work very hard and they are not getting ahead? Because I promise you, sir, those people are aplenty. Like, do you believe that there are people that work hard and don't get ahead, that don't get promoted to manager, that people are working hard and still suffering?
People who work hard and want to get ahead, if they don't get ahead in that job, they'll move on. Same thing with me. If my guys, if I don't pay them enough, they'll move on to someplace else. No, I know that they're good. I'm willing to pay them a very good wage to do a good job. And
I think at base, Gary, I just say this. It sounds like we agree that people, that we agree with the fundamental premise, right? That we agree that if people are willing to work a good hard 40, 50 hours a week, that they should be able to earn a wage that would sustain one single adult with no children. It sounds like we agree about that. And you're saying, well, some people don't work hard. Assume that my premise doesn't apply to those people. If we're talking about people that are willing to work a hard 40 to 50 hours, it sounds like you and I agree that we should be able to pay them an actual wage that somebody can live on.
Right. And my guys work really hard, and they buy new cars. They live in houses. They got nice big lots. They live out.
Yeah, that $40 an hour and benefits. They live out in where? Anyways, it sounds like to me that Gary and I agree that folks that work hard should earn a actual living wage. And Dom, I've heard you and I have chatted about this before, and I fundamentally have this to say. Listen, if your business can't withstand paying people a living wage, maybe your business model ain't good.
Yeah.
Right. Or the market doesn't support that product that you're selling at that price point. Right. It's this fundamental, you know, people, I ask folks all the time, hey, when you go to Walmart, do you buy the $300 microwave that was entirely made in America? Or do you buy the microwave that's $75 with exactly the same power that had all of its parts imported from somewhere else? And it was just a, you know, what do you buy? Because at some point in time, the market tests whether or not you can actually sustain that business model by paying people a fair wage.
Well, the other side of that business model is by not paying a fair wage, or by manipulating the system, keeping them under a certain amount of hours, those kinds of things. Well, you can essentially put those folks onto the public dole, right? Because now they're getting safety net benefits. So in a sense, if you're not, as an employer, paying those living wages, you're essentially subsidizing your payment by putting them onto the very thing that lots of folks complain about, the social safety net system. It's part of the business plan. That should not be the case.
Let's take another call. Jack from Merrimack, you're on the Maggie Don Show. What do you have to say this afternoon?
Just very quickly, the accusation that Trump makes that Democrats are retaliating against Republican states, which is, there's no evidence of that, but that's the accusation that Trump has made. That follows a very clear fascist statement made by Joseph Goebbels, who was Hitler's minister of propaganda. And the statement is, accuse the other side of that of which you are guilty. Because Trump's whole campaign is based on retribution, revenge. That's it.
Yeah, and accusing. Yeah, and accusing. It is a right out of the Goebbels playbook. You accuse the other side of the things that you are actively doing yourself. Donald Trump has said, I'm going to seek revenge. I'm going to get even. He said that he would consider withholding benefits from democratically run states. He said that.
Right. Like, literally. So he is again projecting the same philosophy that he has espoused and putting it onto this current administration, which has, there's no evidence that that's in fact the case. Of course, that would be asinine to do ever, but also certainly in an election year. Come on, man.
Come on, man. That's Dom Salvia. You can check out his show next from 4 to 6 every Monday through Friday. Remember, folks, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me, but it's always better when we stand together here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.